Life can feel overwhelming, but on my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Braithen, we're in it together. Every Friday, a new episode brings you a new story with topics on motherhood, wellness, self-love, and more. Listen to From the Heart with Rachel Braithen wherever you get your podcasts.
Swinging a high drive into center field, hits at the wall, it is gone! Cassis does it again!
Again!
It's gone! It's into the bullpen! This game is tied! This game is tied!
He swings and rips one to center field. It's high, it's deep, it's back, it's gone! Sale winds, he fires. Swing and a miss, strike three, it's over!
All right, Playtesti, we're back. Episode 323. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Rate 5 stars. Find us on the socials at Playtesti on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. Sammy's here. Pat's here. Just to get right into it, did you guys see the Sox get absolutely bodied by Fanatics two days ago, if you're listening?
Yeah, that was... There's no way around it. That was a pretty rough look. What'd they do? They came out and they were just basically saying... Our jerseys were not up to par. So actually, let's rewind in case someone listening doesn't know the situation. The Red Sox had their photo day sometime earlier this week. And it's very clear that the letters that say Red Sox are overlapping with the piping, which are the little like red lines on the chest of the jersey. I don't know how you messed that up. It was obviously Fanatics, but they put out a statement saying that the jerseys aren't up to par. And then
they removed said statement.
Yep. They removed it. And then they had a follow-up where they were like, just so everyone knows, like, we actually wanted this. Yeah, Gordo?
Can I just read them?
Yeah.
All right. The first statement said, as part of Major League Baseball's return to the 2023 jersey template, we approved a design for our home white jerseys that, once produced and seen in person, we felt could be cleaner in the spacing between the lettering and the piping. In collaboration with MLB and Fanatics, we're adjusting the home whites to restore clear separation. The updated jerseys will be ready for opening day, which is great. We talked about it on the last pod. It was enough said. Yeah.
And then...
So they removed that, and there was like maybe a 15-minute gap, and then they released this one. As part of Major League Baseball's return to the 2023 jersey template, we approved a design for our home white jerseys, which Fanatics produced exactly to our specs. Once they were produced and seen in person, we felt there should be more spacing between the lettering and piping. In collaboration with MLB and Fanatics, we're adjusting the home whites to achieve this separation. The updated jerseys will be ready for opening day. We are grateful to our partners for their ongoing support.
Boo. Boo. So they're claiming that they came up with the design that overlaps, because that's the only way it makes sense, since they said that Fanatics gave them what they wanted. And then magically, the Red Sox, whatever design team, whoever does these jerseys that they've had for like 100 years now, just is shocked to see that it doesn't look good when the piping is overlapping with the letters. And we're supposed to believe that that is not the fault of Fanatics, a company notorious for doing shit just like this. Yeah, right.
Don't forget the funniest part of this. The funniest part was the subsequent tweet below the second statement. This is what had me rolling on the floor laughing. This isn't even part of their statement. It's a follow-up tweet, and it says, to be clear, the original design was selected by the Red Sox. Fanatics executed to our specifications and has been an outstanding partner throughout. They deserve no blame, and we are grateful to them for making the new jerseys in time for opening day.
Wait, so
unreal, right? That's crazy.
In this scenario, bodied. Yeah, so in this scenario, kind of what I just said, slightly different. We're expected to believe that Fanatics was like, what do you guys think of this? It's the same as your normal jersey, just overlapping for no reason. And the Red Sox were like, yeah, we love it. And then they saw it in person and changed their mind. Like, it's such a bad lie. It makes no sense.
Well, it's a fuck up on, I don't even know. All I know is that I think it was the Red Sox fault, right? Cause Fanatics takes dirt all the time, and they just right. have to eat it. And this time, they put their foot down. We are not taking shit for this. No, this is on you guys, or we're gonna sue your ass. Like, that's what happened here.
So this is just poor communication. Whatever team is working on this, I assume it's the PR team for the Red Sox or comms, whatever, should like run the statement by Fanatics first. You know, Fanatics, like, hey, we're getting a lot of negative sentiment about the jerseys because of the overlap. We're gonna put out the statement. Are you cool with this? Do you want us to tweak it? So my guess, I don't know what happened, is they put out the statement and then Fanatics reached out to them. There's also a chance that Major League Baseball reached out to them, which
probably,
which, yeah, that might be the case. I'm trying to think, like, who's benefiting most. It's kind of 50-50 between Major League Baseball and Fanatics, because Major League Baseball doesn't want to look stupid. Their uniform provider, this sounds stupid. They don't want their uniform provider to look bad, which... they already are universally hated, and then Fanatic doesn't want themselves to look bad. So, it was, in the end, embarrassing for the Red Sox.
It was just so funny because they came out and they full-blown like stood on business. They're like, no, Fanatics fucked this up. This is not what we want. Fans, we hear you. We're going to fix this. All my homies hate Fanatics. And then 15 minutes later, they're like, oh, our fault. That's on us. We apologize to the fans. We decided to change the jersey. Fanatics, we love you. You do incredible work. We're so pleased with your product at all times. And yeah, again, guys, this is on us. Like, there's not a bigger 180 in terms of PR statements.
It's crazy. It literally went from like, hey, guys, like, as always, if this is on them. Actually, never mind. It's on us. And actually, it's on us. And they absolutely rock, guys. Fanatics, everyone loves them. We love them. They make awesome jerseys. Their Super Bowl merch was incredible. We love those guys, and we know you do too. And, you know, we're going to have Michael Rubin throw out the first pitch on opening day just to show our support.
He can't throw. You seen that video of him throwing?
Oh, my God, dude.
I haven't. Wait.
So, oh, my God. It's Gordo, so bad.
It makes you look like Randy Johnson.
Like,
he can't. He literally cannot throw a baseball. He like cannot do
cent,
it.
Like 50 Cent style, or
just as bad. Oh, just wow. as bad. Pat, are you pulling it up right now? I feel like Gordo has to see
you have
this.
To, you have to send it to
no,
me.
No, I'm not. I could try, but
all right, I'll show you after. It's just the most like when I was in third grade, I could have thrown better than this grown man. Nobody likes Michael Rubin. Nobody likes Fanatics. This is the most, you know, on the same page the sports world has ever been on any topic.
So okay, we had to touch on the jersey thing because that was unbelievably funny.
Like, yeah,
not gonna impact our lives beyond this week, but that I just thought that was hilarious to experience that in real time. This is gonna be maybe the first podcast of the spring where we actually get to talk about baseball. Do I have that right, Pat? Yeah.
Like games.
I have the video of my Michael Rubin throwing a baseball 39 miles an hour.
All right. Send it in our group chat.
I will. I'll show it here just in case you can see it, but then I'll send it to you.
Let me. Oh, no. Oh.
And he paints the grass.
Oh, my God. Oh, wow.
That's second 39. Descent level.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 39 miles an hour. And that well, man is. Also, real quick, closing remark on that. I looked it up. I don't know how accurate it is because I couldn't get a definitive kind of date there. I'm pretty sure that the Fanatics deal with MLB runs through like 2040.
Oh, oh. No. Are you yeah. serious?
Yeah.
Oh, dude, you know I just missed like Majestic. I missed the wall of, we've talked about that on this pod before, the wall of jerseys with every single player at the team store. Like the second they went to Fanatics,
and it's what happens when there's a monopoly. When there's a monopoly, why would Fanatics try?
Yeah, why would the they deal try? Runs the deal runs through at least two decades, indicating it extends through the 2045 season.
Oh my God! Yeah, okay. I mean, we're just cooked. I mean, yeah. Shop Alley Express,
DHgate.
Oh, sorry, DHgate's the new
DHgate.
One.
DHgate.
They're yeah. both good. Wait, is AliExpress gone?
I think it might be gone because otherwise, I don't know why I would have switched. I use DHgate now.
I got a great Tingus Pingus jersey from DHgate.
Same. Mine actually says Tingus Pingus on it.
Oh.
Yeah. Nice. I haven't worn it in a while. Shout out. He's, as we're recording, he's I don't know if he, do we know if he's playing he's on the Warriors now. They're playing tonight against the Seas.
Yeah.
With Horford.
Uh-huh. But there you go.
As I was saying, we're actually going to get to talk about baseball on this show. Like, there's no Tom Werner comments. There's no Sam Kennedy comments. There's no Alex Bregman left. There's no trade. There's no rumors. Like, we're like, the Red Sox are in camp. If you're listening to this on drop day, then hey, maybe they're playing against Northeastern right now. I don't know. But the games are starting, and it's time for us to start talking about, and there's not a ton of them, but some of these roster decisions that are going to have to be made in the next month. And I think the most impactful one, the most important one, is the number five starter, which for most teams, like, you're picking number five starters. Like last year, Sean Newcomb won the job out of camp, the number five job. We were there. We watched it happen. He was like on a golf cart, and AC sits down next to him, and it's like, oh, wow, this is going down right now. This time, like, you've got the Avengers here competing just to make it to the major league rotation. You got Johan Oviedo. You got Patrick Sandoval. You've got Cutter Crawford, who maybe he's hurt. I mean, he's definitely behind. He's not hurt, but he got the flu. He's behind. We don't know if he's going to be ready. You got Peyton Tolley. You got Connelly Early. Those are five guys that are all, I would say, at least potential mid-rotation starters as soon as this year. And they're all in contention for a number five spot in a rotation. That's a pretty crazy spot to be in. I know guys go down all the time in spring training, but right now, five guys for a number five spot, that's crazy.
And there's really no bad egg. There's no guy that I would be upset if they won the fifth starter role. I'm trying to think, like, who's the one you guys want to win least?
That's like an evil question. I know.
That's the point.
I'll go first. I think mine's kind of a hot take, but it's not. I'll explain. I think the one I prefer least to win it is Peyton Tolley.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of the Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to the Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
And I say that only because I think if he were to get whatever it may be, 2-3 solid months working on a repertoire in AAA, I think it would do so much good for him, as opposed to like having kind of middling secondaries with that elite fastball. I think if he just goes to AAA, I don't care if he throws what he did last year, 4 or 5 innings a start. If he can just perfect at least a 3-pitch repertoire when he comes up, he's going to be so, so good. Mm-hmm. I think that's why I want him to win the least, is because I know it would be good for him.
You know, I actually like that take, Pat. I might join you in that take. Even because, like, if Peyton Tolley, and let's leave like injuries aside, like obviously if four of them go down, then yeah, he's the five. But like, if Peyton Tolley goes out there and dominates and earns the spot, like obviously that means he's in a really, really good place. But at the same time, even if he is in that place, like, this is a guy people forget, like, he made his professional debut last year. You've got good options, and not even just like high floor options. You've got high ceiling options. Like, Johan Oviedo they're clearly working with him, but Alex Cora had some good things to say today after talking about how raw he was a couple of days ago. Seemed like today he thought he had a good day. It's like, you've got floor guys like Crawford and Sandoval. You've got ceiling guy, or I'd even loop early in the floor guys. You've got a ceiling guy in Oviedo and definitely a ceiling guy in Tolley. But I kind of like Early's the way Pat put it.
Yeah. The only thing I would amend to that is I don't think Tolley has a chance at winning the fifth spot. I think he has almost no chance at all because of exactly what Pat said. He has too much to work on. And on top of that, he's the number one prospect in the organization. Way too valuable to rush him into a full-time starting role. Last year, bring him up for a cup of coffee, whatever. That's different. But out of camp, almost no chance for Peyton Tolley. And that's not a knock on him whatsoever. For me, I think Cutter Crawford is going to be a leverage relief pitcher or a really good multi-inning relief pitcher guy. If his stuff plays up out of the bullpen, nasty, nasty. And if he's in the rotation, I think he's a fine back-end starting pitcher. And you can almost say the same thing about Patrick Sandoval. It's just a little tougher coming off the injury. But so those two would be the guys that I kind of, not that I don't want them to win the job. I would strongly prefer Oviedo or Connolly Early over both those two.
It's kind of like an unspoken reality of this pitching staff and specifically the bullpen. I mean, Wilson and Matt's out the door. They don't add a lefty. They didn't really add to the bullpen. And it's not even really to say that the bullpen needed additions necessarily. It was one of the best bullpens in baseball last year. But if like Chapman and Whitlock aren't the epitome of perfection out of the bullpen, which they were for the majority of last year, you are going to need other guys to step up. And Cutter Crawford could be one of those guys. And you know, maybe that role would be best for him with the state of this team. Like I see him as a floor guy because I think if you put him in your rotation, he would be a good back end starter for you. But there is a lot of upside out of the bullpen, and we've seen it before. I mean, it's tough because he has – I mean, they all have options except Sandoval. So you don't have to make any of them relievers.
Gordo, when you say floor guy, I think I know what you mean, but can you explain it?
Like a guy who I know this year you can put in there and he's going to give you a chance to win games and be able to go deep enough in games to sustain a spot in the rotation.
Okay, so you wouldn't call Toley a floor guy because he could be a disaster in the big leagues. We don't know.
Yeah, no. Totally, definitely not a floor guy.
Ceiling guy.
Yeah. Ceiling, big ceiling guy. Oh, big ceiling guy. Maybe in the future floor guy, but right now, definitely a ceiling guy.
I do think that Patrick Sandoval making money and Johan Oviedo costing password in a trade gives those two a leg up on everyone else.
And the fact that Cutter's just, he's behind. Like, if you're behind, It's already hard enough to catch up if you're behind in general. But again, like you're going against guys who could be number threes for a number five spot.
Yeah, it's also just it comes down to asset management, right? Like you would think that Sandoval and Oviedo have this slight upper hand pending complete disaster in spring training. Just because Sandoval is on a 1-year deal on not bad money for a starting pitcher. If that's a guy who can hold his own in the fifth spot, that's a guy who once early Toley are like developed in AAA. You can flip him for some form of a commodity at the deadline and then bring one or both of those guys up for that fifth spot. So that is the rationale for kind of going with Sandoval. Going with Oviedo, you obviously gave up a fringe top 100 guy to get him. He played really, really well last year. The fastball was almost unhittable at points last year. So there's also that. And he has options. So like if he's a guy who you're like, he's just not doing what we thought he would do, whatever – you send him down, you flip him with early, Toley, whatever you want. But I think that's why Oviedo and Sandoval have the upper hand in those two spots because there's really, really sound rationale for either of them getting the five. In a vacuum, early and Toley specifically, there's really no need to rush those guys. You have no reason to throw them in the five spot unless they're doing that good. Like they're just complete shutout in spring training.
Yeah, I feel like, and Breslow said it, at some point, it might have been in his media availability early on in camp, but he talked about how the fact that because we have four awesome starters leading this rotation, we can chase ceiling a little bit in that number five spot. And to me, that kind of points to Oviedo. But at the same time, it's like if there's things he could work on and could benefit from working on, like there's, in my opinion, really no reason why you should rush him into the five spot if there are things he can work on in AAA. If you think he is right now your fifth best starter, by all means, go for it. But you don't have to fit a square peg into a round hole right away. Like, again, we've been over this so many times. Like, the guys who make the team at the end of March are not the guys who are on the team in May, June, July, certainly not September and October. So you don't have to go to him right away.
You know, the Red Sox would never do that. They would never try to fit a square peg in a round hole. Come on. For me, the guy I think will win, also kind of the guy I want to win, is Johan Oviedo. I think I know I've been on my soapbox about this guy for however long now, but what, 6'6", 275, and he sits almost 96 miles an hour? Hard for me not to, like, elite extension. If he can throw more strikes, like, what's the knock? Because that's a knock on him right now. Mixes in his pitch as well already, throws hard, extension, like you said, Gordo. what would be the knock on Johan Oviedo if he started throwing strikes? Very excited.
That's what Cora talked about today. It's like, there's a lot of moving parts here. We want to move in quicker. We want it to be repeatable. So yeah, it really is going to be about consistency with him. And yeah, that's the guy. Like, if you want to talk about ceiling, I guess a mix of floor and ceiling, because I told he's got a higher ceiling, but ceiling for 2026, I think out of those five, it's comfortably Oviedo, right? For ceiling for this year alone.
Ceiling? I mean, we saw Connelly Early come up last year and pitch really well. If he does that for
15-20
starts.
That's not fair of me.
Most likely to be a mid to back end rotation starter in 2026, I can give you Johan Oviedo. But ceiling? I don't know. That's why when the Red Sox traded for Oviedo, I felt like an idiot, because I was dancing around in the streets in excitement, just because this is the dung beetle ball of dung that Craig Breslow is going to mold into, or Craig Breslow and his pitching pipeline, Andrew Bailey and all those guys, can mold into a legit major league starter. And you just don't get 6'6", 275 pitchers who just throw gas and it's exciting. And I feel good with this pitching pipeline. This is all new. The pitching and defense, the pitching pipeline does not feel like we're talking about the Boston Red Sox, but here we are.
I think if the season opened today, I actually think it would be Patrick Sandoval in the five spot.
Me too.
And I wouldn't be mad about it. I would completely understand it. I'm looking at Johan Oviedo's numbers from last year. The strikeout stuff was actually pretty good, especially toward the later part of his year. He made 9 starts last year. 42 strikeouts and 40 in the third inning. So, I mean, over 9. The one thing, Sammy, that you brought up, that I think this is going to be the deciding factor on whether or not he gets that 5 spot, his command was really, really bad when he came back. He walked 3 or more in 7 of his 9 starts. With that, he also never pitched over 5 2/3 innings.
I was going to say, and he's not throwing deep into games either. So those numbers might not sound too bad, but with that context, it is bad. So that's what I'm saying, though. If Johan Oviedo, if he can throw strikes, that is a big league, middle of the rotation, back of the rotation starter with big upside, literally.
Yeah, he walked 23 and 40 in the third inning. So, I mean, he's putting a lot of runners on. But like you said, the stuff is there. Like, he sits 96, 97. The off-speed stuff was always good. Weirdly enough, it was his fastball that didn't really play. But then he came back from surgery, and his fastball was incredible. But, I mean, if he comes out and he makes his starts and he's not walking the merry-go-round, he's still sitting 96, 97, he's getting plenty of swing and miss, I think that's enough to put him over the edge in the Red Sox eyes, to put him in there over Patrick Sandoval.
That's the thing is, like, I know they're not going to admit it, but it is Oviedo's job to lose. Maybe that's putting it a little too far in his favor, but like if they all pitch to the peak of their powers this spring, he's going to be the one that gets the job because of the upside.
Right.
And because of what they invested in him, as you guys said.
Yeah, I agree with both of you. Right now, if the season started tomorrow, it'd be Sandoval, but I think that the favorite to win it eventually has to be Oviedo. I still think Sandoval is going to get traded. I think there's going to be multiple trades happening during spring training. I think that if Yoshida plays well in the World Baseball Classic, I think he'll get moved. And I think that Sandoval might get moved regardless.
That's the thing is, like, I agree with you, and at least just sticking on Sandoval here, I agree with you that just because he hasn't been traded now and it feels like transactions have slowed does not mean, like, we see a lot of moves towards the end of spring training. And the second another team has a pitcher go down, they're going to be on the phone with the Red Sox. They're going to be on the phone with the team with some of the deepest pitching depth in the league.
Atlanta.
Yeah.
Atlanta. Like perfect spot. Yeah.
But the Atlanta, thing is, Minnesota.
Well, yeah. One of them, I think one of them is going to get Patrick Sandoval. The other one is going to get Lucas Giolito.
Zach Littell, too.
Littell is still
unreal.
Out there.
He's good every year, and nobody cares.
Nobody cares.
None. No cares.
I kind of want, if they can get a good deal for him, by all means, take it. But I feel like the best case scenario outcome here is Patrick Sandoval wins the job, pitches really well, guys are knocking down the door in AAA. Like Oviedo looks like he is like a monster. Tolley and Early are everything we think they're going to be. And the Red Sox just have so much pitching that they trade Sandoval to a contender at the deadline when if he's proven he can still pitch in the majors, in major league games, not just spring training games, and he's one of the Red Sox, I shouldn't say one of their better pitchers, but if he's putting together quality start after quality start for them, that's when you could really cash in on value, is a legitimate starting pitcher at the trade deadline. It's wishful thinking, though, because, yeah, him staying earlier, healthy and being that good.
Like, could even be earlier. We see early trades sometimes. Last year was the Priester. Big one, aside from Devers. Yeah, Priester. That's it. Yeah. So maybe a team gets an injury early on and they're desperate and they, quote unquote, overpay for Sandoval. That could be great. But if not, the deadline, I still think he gets traded before the season starts. There's just, I can't envision him pitching regular season baseball games for the Red Sox, but maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah. And like, there is a world out there where the Sox are, I couldn't even tell you the last team that this happened with, really. They have so much quality pitching depth that they're a winning, buying team in selling off of surplus to either upgrade in the power department, in the bullpen, replenish the farm. Like, there's plenty of avenues where they can substantially upgrade the team or the farm with Patrick Sandoval if he pitches well.
Is there part of you guys that wants to see him out of the bullpen again, like talking about Wilson and Matt's going out the door? I mean, they're left-handed pitchers right now, Giovanni Moran and Samaniego. Am I missing one? There's another. Or Sandoval the third that I feel like I'm missing. Tolley, but he's not going to pitch out of the bullpen.
He won't make the team. But the kid we got from Washington, Bennett, he's a lefty too, right?
Yeah,
he's going to start.
Yeah. Yeah,
which awesome things we've heard about Bennett so far. Really encouraging there.
The Sox seem really, really big on Giovanni Moran. Mm-hmm. And I'm excited. I'm actually really excited to see him play. He is officially playing in the WBC, yes?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah. So he'll be one. Typically, one thing that I've kind of noticed is that when they like a guy in the bullpen that they have, typically, knock on wood, they pan out. So there's definitely something that they like and can see working with Giovanni Moran.
Mm. The other lefties on the 40-man roster, you have Alec Gamboa, who the Red Sox traded for, right? Traded.
He's not on the 40-man, is he?
Or he's a non-roster, excuse me. Not the 40. Non-roster invitees. Gamboa, TJ Sikkema, former first-round pick, Yankees. Jeremy Wu Yelland. So not a ton of experience from the NRIs.
But Pat, to Pat's point, like they last year, I mean, they went into the season with Aroldis Chapman as the closer, and the reaction from us was, oh my God, who's going to get lefties out before the ninth inning? And Justin Wilson, he was awesome.
We were pissed when they signed Justin Wilson. That was the first signing.
Yeah.
We're like, he had a 4.5 ERA and you gave him whatever it was, like $4 million. We're like, what are you doing? And then he comes in and he's basically Chris Martin light.
Do you remember like that happened right? It was the day that the Juan Soto meeting thing came out. So like there was Juan Soto news and it's like, bang, they signed Justin Wilson. And Pat, you're being a little nice. He was coming off a 5.59 ERA.
Yes. It was terrible.
And his FIP wasn't good either. He had a 4.73 FIP. He was good for the Red Sox. I don't know if I'd really call him Chris Martin. That's high praise.
Whoa. I said Chris Martin light, as in like
okay,
quality all right, late inning old leverage arm.
He was fair. He was good. Gordo thought he was sexy. I like Justin Wilson.
The dude walked out of the dugout in Arizona. Dude, big shoulders on that guy. Big shoulders. All right.
I didn't know where you were going with that one.
He walked out and Gordo goes, dude, he's in good shape or something. I was like, no, he's not.
I think I said dude's built.
I won't say. Yeah. Yeah, he's built. Everyone's built in a different way, technically. So, yeah, we're all built. What do you think about it?
I'm built.
But Justin Wilson was a good signing. They need to replace him. I would prefer they just, what's it going to cost? $2 million for like Jalen Beeks or Coulomb? Someone. Pat, you're muted.
Oh, how awkward.
How awkward.
I love that. Every time Pat's muted, I'm like, oh, we get the awkward comment.
Coulomb. Beeks is interesting. Beeks, once he was traded, Gordo, who is Jalen Beeks traded for?
Nathan Eovaldi. Was Thank it one you. For one?
Yes.
That one I would have gotten.
But he's had a couple good years out of the pen. I think he'd be an interesting arm. But yeah, like Beeks, Coulomb, just someone from the outside to come in and kind of fill the Wilson hole.
Whoa.
That, I mean, I feel like if that was going to happen, it would have happened by now. That's
why, though. There's like a handful of guys still out there.
But why, like,
what maybe they're waiting to get Sandoval's money out of there, and I don't know.
No, it could be something like that. You're right. It could be waiting to dump some more salary to add any more. It could be.
Coulomb just seems like the best option. Like, he's no superstar. He's not your eighth inning guy, hopefully. But if he has to be, you don't feel terrible about it. 55 games last year, 2.3 ERA.
Dude, he Solid. Was he was amazing with the Twins before the trade.
Let me see. I want to see his leverage numbers because this is important to me when we're talking about.
They must be good. With the Twins, there's no way he was pitching low leverage. It was crazy. The Orioles non-tendered him the year before.
I was just going to say that. He was the one that was like out of nowhere non-tendered after having a very good year, right?
Yeah, he had like a mid to low twos ERA with the Orioles, I think.
All right. I have it right here. He was non-tendered at age 34 by the Orioles. 33 games. He had a 2.12 ERA.
That's wild. And the year before that, he had a 2.81. And the year before that, weird. He was with the Twins before the Orioles, too. Year before
he
that,
has,
he had a 3.67.
In his last four seasons, so 2022, 10 games, a 1.46 ERA. Dude, 23 in Baltimore. He threw in 61 games and had a 2.81. 2024 threw in 33 games with a 2.12, got non-tendered. And then between Minnesota and Texas, Minnesota, he was very good. Texas, he was very bad. 55 games and a 2.3. So it's not like it's an anomaly of a good season. He's had a real couple of really good seasons.
Who's the
very good in leverage, too? I'm looking right now. He's very good in high leverage spots. So maybe that's the guy.
Why am I forgetting the name of the dude with the crazy hair? Big Country, I think his nickname is.
Lefty Chafin? Reliever.
Andrew Chafin. He signed with the, I think it was the Twins.
Yeah,
and
minor league.
Yeah, and he in an interview was like, the computers just don't get me. They don't like me. They don't like that I can't throw hard, but I know how to get guys out. And Danny Coulomb, fastball averages 90.3 miles an hour, and he had a bad finish to the season with the Rangers last year. So, I mean, those two things right there, it's not a recipe for a big deal.
Whoa. Okay. He's right. Andrew Chafin, 42 games last year. What do you guys think his ERA was?
Dude, it was
Must
great.
Have been in the threes, right?
Low threes?
Low twos, 2.41.
How many games?
42. Oh, Damn. We talked about him, remember? Okay. Rewind. 2.41 ERA, 42 games, 33 innings.
So, there we go. Yeah.
Yeah, very weird. But hey, 2.41 ERA is a 2.41 ERA, unless his FIP is his FIP crazy high or something. Nope. 2.99. 2.21 ERA plus. And yeah, he got a minor league deal.
But like throw Danny Coulomb the Matt Moore deal. Like give him a spring training opt out. Because I'm fully confident that if Danny Coulomb or Beeks come in, they'll win the other lefty job in the pen because there's no competition there.
100%. Give. I mean, granted, if I'm Danny Coulomb after the year I had, and granted, if Chafin got it off of that season that you just talked about, Sammy, then really anything's on the table. But like, it's borderline insulting. Like, do we think that these guys just don't have major league deals on the table? Like,
I wouldn't understand it. By the way, Coulomb's nickname is Frenchie. So. I don't understand how a guy, every team needs bullpen help. You have a guy, Coulomb, who pitched 55 games last year. He had a pretty even strikeout rate, 43 innings, 43 strikeouts. That's 9 per 9. That's math. And everything else looks good. And he's good in leverage. He has a track record. Like, it has to be what you said, Gordo, where he ended the season poorly and the velocity's bad and he's older. So,
yeah.
That has to be it.
To loop it back to what Pat said, though, it's like you almost, after what they did with Wilson last year, you almost have to trust him with the lefty reliever thing.
Yeah.
Like Giovanni, I mean, like if they love Giovanni Moran, like who are we to say that that's not, I mean, granted, I would like another option. And last year they, like Matt Moore was another option brought in.
Yeah, they do like Giovanni Moran. I have no clue what the rhyme or reason is for that. My guess would be his changeup. That's his out pitch.
Yeah. I mean, that's his best pitch, and they like him because they think he can get righties out. But it's like if he doesn't work, then you're on to Samaniego. If you trade Sandoval, like obviously Sandoval could be in the bullpen. He said he's willing to do it because he's being paid, though it'd be a new role and it would be an adjustment. But
good strikeout numbers in the minors for Samaniego last year. Doesn't walk a lot of guys either. It's a good sign.
Was he was double A last year?
He pitched in double A. Yeah.
Like we've seen guys make the jump. Speaking of double A, what was the name of the guy they took in the Rule 5?
Watson.
Ryan Watson. We haven't heard a word about him.
We just heard that, who was the guy who was nice to him? Slayton or Whitlock? One of them came up to him and was like, hey man, come sit with us, because he didn't know anyone.
Why? Yeah, but like, why have we not heard about, I mean, that's the thing is like, I feel like, remember when Whitlock was in camp, he was the, like off of the Rule 5, he was the star of the show. And with Slayton, there was big talk about, oh yeah, this guy's going to potentially be a weapon for us. We haven't heard that. I wonder if there's a shot this guy gets returned.
Yeah, and he's right-handed too, which doesn't help his case. Pat?
Ryan Watson is pitching the Grapefruit League opener.
On Saturday?
Yes. So Smitty, okay. So Tolley is starting, and then Smitty said Samaniego, Whitlock, and Ryan Watson are also scheduled to pitch that day. So we'll see him Saturday.
Okay.
I mean, he'll probably go one inning at a time. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what to expect, but there's not like he's one of those guys where it's like there's a few guys in this bullpen you can't option him. A couple guys that like obviously you could option Slayton, but you're not going to. There's just not a lot of up and down mobility in the bullpen, which is maybe why they was Bernie out of options. Like that's the weird thing in all of this is that Bernie and Murphy are gone, and Mattson and Wilson are gone. And we don't add an established lefty to the mix. And it's like Giovanni Moran was behind all of those guys last year. And now he's the guy. It's just weird.
Yeah, it's strange.
Shout out Smitty again. I think he's literally the only beat writer who has written about. Yeah, I think it's Smitty has like 5 tweets about Ryan Watson. I don't see any other. Cora said on Ryan Watson after he threw live BP, we're recording on Thursday, so Tuesday. He threw a lot of strikes. That's what we want. Stuff is really good. Obviously, everybody's going to start comparing him to Whitlock's situation in Slayton. One thing they did, they threw strikes from the get-go, and today was a good day for him. So, I mean, do what you will with that, but we'll see.
I mean, it's a positive quote. I mean, he doesn't need to be the star of camp to make the team, I suppose, and he could make the team and not pitch well, and then they could return him then.
You know who's interesting, who we haven't mentioned much at all on the show? Hayden Mullins, and he only pitched in double A last year, but I don't think he's too far off from being a big league pitcher. Like he's a left-handed reliever. What do you really have to learn in triple A if you're doing well in double A? He was really good in 2025. He only pitched 22 games, but he was starting 101 and two-thirds innings, 123 strikeouts, and he destroys lefties. So that's another guy worth considering. He's the Red Sox 15th ranked prospect at the moment.
All right.
Hi, I'm PJ Vogt, and I want to tell you about my podcast, Search Engine. We try to make sense of the world, one question at a time. No question too big, no question too small. We will even answer your questions if you send them in. Stuff like, what happens when a cemetery goes out of business? What should we do about teens using AI to do their homework? Who buys luggage at the airport luggage store? Follow and listen to Search Engine in partnership with Odyssey, wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm trying to count how many guys are on the 40 man right now.
Is Wonky delivery too.
They should be at 40 after the Durbin trade.
I thought it was 30.
33, 34, 35, 36, 37, 38, 39, 40.
IKF, I forgot.
Yeah. But is Hauk on this?
No, he got transferred to the 60-day IL.
So yeah, they've got 40, and that's after Hauk. So that's the one issue with the NRIs and a guy like Mullins is you got to add him to the 40. Which I mean, there are guys on here that you could make an argument to DFA, but like one of those guys, like what it could be
DFA, or I mean, just even they've done it before. They did it with Murph and Bernie and everyone else. Oh. Just trading away from the bottom. Yeah.
Wait a minute. No, we're forgetting that there are two guys on this team. One is Mickey Gasper. The other one is Sung Che Chang. They can DFA. Yeah. They can DFA one of those guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or both. Chang has been DFA'd 4 times this offseason.
Yeah.
3 times, 4 times. Yeah. He's a good glove at shortstop, I've heard, but that's it.
Yeah. He was like the number one ranked prospect in chase rate, right?
Brass.
No. Okay. All right. Maybe I'm just too deep in the weeds. I'm sure
you're right.
I'm pretty sure in 24, 25, he was like being praised for his lack of chase in his swing decisions. Plus, he's a phenomenal glove. Yeah, I think that just showed that I'm way too deep in the weeds.
Well, we got breaking news. The Kansas City Royals just acquired an all-star.
Ooh, pitcher or bat?
Bat.
Was it a signing?
Yeah. Yeah.
Do tell. Who is it?
All-Star Game MVP.
Oh, the
LSDS.
Yeah.
To a minor league deal with an invite to spring training.
That's Dude. Interesting. Like those, I mean, I don't know. They got your boy, but.
Who?
Jason DeLay.
Oh, the Red Sox. Yeah, I thought you meant the Royals. Yeah, I'm a huge fan of the big DeLay.
You tweeted about it today.
My fun fact, half of his major league home runs have come at Fenway Park, even though he played for the Pirates. Half of them.
Are you upset that none of the beat has asked Alex Cora about Jason DeLay yet?
Well, what's there to ask about the big DeLay? He's the present and the future.
I can't even make fun of you because you nailed Jason Alexander, but I'm tempted. Jason DeLay, you know what? We need a battery of Johan Ramirez and Jason DeLay. Wait a minute, they were on the same team last year. Can we figure out if that ever happened?
Ooh, no, he didn't play last year.
Ah,
he had a meniscus thing. Wait. I think something like that.
Oh wait, he didn't play at all, like even in the minors.
Oh, he may have played in the minors actually. I don't know. We got to do some research. But I just thought that was interesting that half of his home runs have come at Fenway. And nobody took the moment to ask, hey, Sammy, how many home runs has he hit? Two. He's hit two. The other one was against the Marlins. I know his mom's name is Vicky. He's from Texas. I know everything about the big DeLay.
Can you tell me how you came across his mom's name? Like, how did that piece of information enter your brain?
I just texted him. I said, what's your mom's name?
Did you see his dad's name?
Yeah, I can't remember what it is, though.
Rain?
Rain, like Rain Wilson?
Boo!
No, like Rain DeLay, Gordo, is a joke.
Boo. Oh, wow, you're good. You're good. No,
his dad's name is something. You want me to tell you? Let me
While Sammy looks it up, that just the Rain DeLay dad joke reminded me because Cotillo tweeted about it the other day. You guys remember in the press box when Cotillo made that Mickey Gasper joke and no one, like, I think it was McAdam just groaned. That was, it was funny because of the reaction to the joke, not the joke. For those who don't know, last spring training, the Sox are playing the Twins and Cotillo said something like, oh, I just ran into Mickey Gasper's wife down in the concourse. And someone was like, how do you know Mickey Gasper's wife? And he was like, you don't know Minnie? You don't know Mickey and Minnie Gasper? No one in the press box laughed. And I think it was McAdam. It just goes, ugh.
Nothing in this world beats the spring training press box.
Oh, it's the best.
Yeah. Cotillo just watches March Madness.
You guys think we're going to see Julia and Kelly this year?
I'm not falling for it, but I don't know what you're referencing.
Sorry. I'm talking about Jason DeLay's siblings, Julia and Kelly.
There it is. Yeah, sisters. I knew it was some bullshit.
I don't understand how you guys aren't more excited about Jason DeLay.
I don't even get the joke.
Those are his sisters' names. There's no joke.
Oh, they're actually his...
His two sisters. Dude, his dad is Tim DeLay. His mom is Vicky DeLay. And his sisters are Julia and Kelly DeLay. How do you not know this?
I mean, the beautiful thing is you could find him in Worcester.
I don't know why that got me so bad. I don't get the joke.
His mom's a badass. His mom's a badass. She beat breast cancer. Badass.
Okay. Shout out to Vicky, you said?
Yeah.
Shout out to Vicky. Yeah, Pat, you made your rain delay thing. I'm like, there's no way. Ugh.
Anyway, but yeah, I'm excited for the big delay.
Are you excited to watch him catch the Red Sox number 5 starter, which is who, Sammy?
I'm going to go Johan Oviedo. That's my official prediction.
It's fluid. I'm sticking with Oviedo for now too, but it's fluid. Like I could be convinced. I could be convinced of Sandoval.
He would have to either pitch really poorly in spring training or Patrick Sandoval would have to just be a god tier for me to change that.
Couldn't you see that? Couldn't you see Oviedo going out there and just bombing spring training and it's like, okay, we can't do this.
Yeah, it's just walking the world.
Yeah. Like I could see that. I could also see him going out there and he's like, I like to talk about spring training darlings every year. This year, Willier Abreu, I mean, he might be too established to be one, but I'm making him one anyway. But we need a new one, and Oviedo is in that tier where he could become that. It's on the table. But he could also bomb. Pat, who do you think?
I don't know, man. I'm just still stuck on how do we even approach Jason DeLay's siblings?
The one thing I don't know is if they're married. Because if they're married, I got to learn the husband's names. And then if they've changed their last name, because I've done all this research on Jason DeLay.
Well, okay. You could approach them with Playtesi microphones. We have four now. We have four Playtesi microphones now. But if you're interviewing both siblings, it means one of us can't be in the interview. Pat, should we kick Sammy out?
Yeah. Yeah, I get too excited.
Well, No. I think we kick Sammy out because all of the questions we would ask, he would know the answer to before them.
That's what I'm saying.
I think it'd be a waste of mic space.
Just it's like also not an interesting interview. Like, who wants to hear an interview where the person asking the questions knows the answers before they're even said?
The way we can fix it is if you input between the question and the answer, you just have to input a delay.
I hate it here.
End of the podcast.
What was the other topic we were gonna do?
Tristan.
We can save Tristan.
We'll save Tristan.
We'll save Tristan.
Well, no, he's healthy and he's gonna hit 48 home runs. So
there we go.
There you go.
Deal. Yeah, we'll save Tristan. We'll save. What day is it today? Tomorrow's Friday, so Monday for Monday's up.
We'll talk
some Tristan. It's been a while since we've gone in depth about Tristan. We went in depth on Tristan Casas pretty much all of April waiting for him to re-break out, and then he ripped his knee in half and it never happened.
Gordo, last episode you had a good quote. You were like, you were talking about how you wanted Casas to break out, and you said people were being such pricks about it.
I was like, they were.
Get angry, Gordo. I love it.
Freaking pricks. People are ridiculous. Like, I tweeted out, like Tristan said something along the lines of, like, I've never wavered in my confidence. And people are just like, fuck this guy. And it's like, what? What did he do? What? He wears a ski mask. Okay. He's himself.
That's just him.
Why do we want our athletes to be boring? Like, why?
I don't know. Well, that's baseball, dude. You growing up playing little league to high school, JV, varsity. It's always like you're taught to be like buttoned up. So that's just how people view baseball. And I think it's changing, which is great because it's way more exciting when we have guys like Fernando Tatis like throwing their bats when they hit a home run, or I hate to say it, Jazz Chisholm, guys who will talk. Even we spoke to Hunter Dobbins. He was saying, like, I like that Jazz talks crap. So the feeling is mutual between combatants. Like, that's good for the game. So I don't understand the hate for Tristan Cobb. Well, I do. I don't know if I want to say it on the podcast. I think it's dudes who don't like when another guy paints his nails and it makes, they don't like it. So I don't know. I fuck him.
Fuck him.
Let the man be. Let him be. Let him hit.
Let him fucking do his thing. Sorry. Sorry for cursing. Sorry, Joe.
Enough said.
Yeah, I'll go. So as you guys know, left my job last year, my full-time job. Been applying to new stuff. I applied to a job last week, got rejected on Tuesday this week. And then today I got another email from that same company re-rejecting me. I got two rejections from one job app. I was like, oh, did they change their mind? Oh, no, they're rejecting me again. So who's got it better than me? I don't think anyone has been double rejected. So that's a first. We'll call that a win.
Do you think that they were rejecting your rejection and therefore
accept? I'm back in.
Yeah. Accepting.
Yeah.
Great. I got a job.
Could be.
Start tomorrow at 9. Sharp.
Tomorrow, I'll be there. I don't know where the office is, but I'll be there.
Yep.
If you're on time, you're late.
Yep. The traditional Friday morning start a new job.
Well, yep.
Yeah.
You know what they say, Gordo? One in your bush is worth two in your hand. Anyway.
They say that.
There you go.
Yep.
There we go.
Pat, go ahead.
Yeah. All right. I got enough said. I have a issue, a gripe, a grievance I want to air out with Rolling Stone. I have the list up. They released a top 10 song since the year 2000. Mind you, there's been so many good songs, good musicians that have come out since that time. Their number 3 song is Thunder by
Imagine Dragons.
Imagine dragging these balls on your forehead. That is my enough said. Thank you.
You got him, dude. You got him.
Gotcha.
Gordo, Pat texted me and he said, I'm going to do a joke on Gordo for enough said. Don't say anything. He really got you there.
So there's no list?
No, there's no list. That was completely.
No. I was like, Pat reads Rolling Stone?
I was thinking to myself, I was like, oh, Pat's like crapping on Thunder. I kind of like that song. Trivia question, whose walk-up song was that?
Mitch Moreland? No.
No, close.
Wait, what's the song? Oh, Feel the Thunder.
Yeah.
Okay.
Lightning and the Thunder.
Not JD.
Benny's was low. Benny's was low cash.
Pat said Mitch Moreland and I said
close. Was it Steve Pierce?
It was Steve Pierce.
Yeah.
Oh, that's bad. That's bad. I think...
Why is that bad?
I think... It's not
a good walk-up song.
Imagine Dragons, dude.
I think it's a good walk-up song.
No.
And he would hit freaking bombs. It rocked. You'd hear the thunder, and then he'd put one over the monster.
Lightning and the thunder.
Lightning and the thunder.
I think thunder. Carabas's nickname for Pierce might be my favorite player nickname ever. Piss Missile Pierce. Like, that's...
Yeah, that's a good one.
That's a good one.
Voila. That's a good one.
And he rocked for one season we needed him to rock. What did he do? What did Steve Pierce do in 2019? I know he was hurt.
Dude, it was so bad. He hit, I think, under 200.
Yeah, wow. Should have let him go. They should have ended. I mean, nobody remembers that, so it's fine.
I was thrilled when they resigned.
He hit 180
with a 503 OPS in 29 games.
Yeah. Could be worse.
Oh my God, dude, he rocked the year before in 50 games. 279, 7 homers, 901 OPS, 141 OPS plus. That's what he did for the Sox when they needed him in 18. That is a platoon.
Yeah, that was the best. That was a 3-hole platoon.
That rocked. Okay, my enough said before we get out of here is just shout out to all of us in the great state of Massachusetts. Honestly, actually, in the country, all across the United States, for making it through what I consider the worst sports period of the year. I know the Olympics are going on, but no baseball yet. Football's over. And then the NBA's in the All-Star break. NHL's on pause. Is that what it's called for the Olympics? On pause.
The Olympic break.
The Olympic break. No American pause. Sports right now. So maybe I'm thinking of the transaction freeze. That's what they called it.
That's what the trade freeze is, yeah. Yeah.
Trade freeze. But shout out to us for making it through it. Celtics are tipping off in an hour for us, and hopefully they won if you're listening. But shout out to us for making it through about a week of what the hell do we do. And spring training games start tomorrow, so this is great.
That's why you got to play video games, dude. I didn't even know there were no sports going on. I was in the world of Gilinor training.
I was in the world of 5-on-5 in the 2K rec. It's a time. You guys should get the game. We should play fives.
I'm too addicted to RuneScape. But my RuneScape account is getting so advanced that I'm like borderline embarrassed to show people it now.
Yeah. I pre-ordered the show.
I almost did it today and then I didn't finish it, but I will.
Yeah.
I've got a good playtesty post that's going up on the day the show comes out. You guys know. You guys know what's coming.
Is it going to be the cover with someone? I don't know who it is. I just have a feeling it's going to be a MLB The Show cover with
someone. Oh, obscure. Yeah. No, I know who it is. Yeah.
Well, somebody's plural. There could be some stuff.
Yeah, there's a couple.
There's a few. But yeah, the three of us, Joe Braverman, maybe we'll get Brad for a PS5, and the five of us can run and run fives. Can you imagine?
No, I
we all scan our faces.
I gotta play RuneScape. I can't. I'm super addicted. So I really can't.
Oh, okay.
I gotta get 99 sailing. Okay. Anyway, let's go.
Let's wrap it so Sammy can get on a RuneScape. Okay.
Yep. Yeah. Please.
That's gonna do it. Episode 323 of Playtesty. Appreciate you guys tuning in. Remember to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Rate 5 stars. Find us on the socials at Playtesty on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. We are just under a month until the PT gang hits spring training and about a month and a week away from real games. It's a good time. We're almost there, fellas. But for Sammy, for Pat, for Joe producing, it is Gordo for Playtesty episode 323. We'll be back on Monday. Thanks for tuning in. Peace.
What's up, little psychos? I'm Investigator Slater, host of the Psychopedia podcast. Psychopedia is a true crime podcast delivering raw, real, and absolutely gripping episodes every single week. I dig deep to uncover fascinating details of heinous true crime cases while exploring criminology and psychology theories. I take you into the absolute darkest corners of the human psyche, my favorite territory, and present cases like you've never heard them before. Follow and listen to Psychopedia everywhere you get your podcasts.